fantastic, but they had to be able to back it up, being able to handle those quick vocals, mm-hmm. and it was tough. So Squeeze is a hell of a band, and you got to interact with them as well.
Yeah, and I was a big Squeeze fan to begin with, of their songwriting particularly. They have, you know, it's almost like they had Noel Coward writing the lyrics. It was it's such brilliant songwriting. And the first time we played with them, we did 6 shows in New York City at the Bottom Line, which was a historic club down there. And then a few years later on the Black Coffee in Bed tour, they played the Orpheum, and we opened for them at the Orpheum. But the New York shows were great. It was the original band with Jules Holland on keyboards. And the guys in Squeeze were just fantastic. Everybody was nice. We did the 6 shows. They went very well. The last night of the 6th show, Sting came and had Ian Hunter of Mott the Hoople and Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin were all there. And after the show, yeah, I know. This is what happens, you know. And we used to record at the Hit Factory in New York, and I you'd be wandering around the different floors on the Hit Factory. I bump into everybody. I walked out of the door, the elevator on one floor at one point, and there was Roberta Flack, and I met Paul Simon at like 3:30 in the morning. You know, I said to him, "You're Paul Simon." He said, "I know."
Yeah.
And you know, and Daryl Hall, I used to bump into there. You know, you just never know who you were going to bump into. But anyway, so they all came.
But anyway,
yeah, we were in the dressing room afterwards, and I had met Sting before because I was there when they played The Rat for the first time. When they did that first tour where they were all piled into like a station wagon with all their equipment. So I chatted with him, you know, we talked about Boston, you know, how they played. They came up the club ladder, they played The Rat, then The Paradise, then, you know, they sort of went up the ladder. And I said hi to Ian Hunter. I love Mott the Hoople. I mean, they were just such an iconic band.
Wow.
All the young dudes. And I spoke briefly with Jimmy Page, who was in his cups and not very pleasant. But what are you going to do?
We all have our moments.
In his cups, yeah. He had tipped a few drinks.
I see. And that's what I thought you meant, but I just wanted to...
Yeah, and, you know, and it's, I mean... You end up meeting a lot of people, and it was an interesting experience because mostly you just learn that they're like you and I.
They're
married and they have families or whatever. And, you know, and they have a lot of the same issues we do. They just have a lot more money.
Yeah, I mean, did you find that to be an enlightening thing? And it's like, okay, I understand that. Or was it sort of a little bit of a letdown because you look up to these musicians and to find out, well, they put their pants on the same way I do.
Well, I think after you get over the shock of meeting some of your heroes a couple of times, you finally realize, look, you know, they're just like you and I. You know, and every day they have people running after them saying, oh, sign this and take a photo and do this and do that. And you want to approach them on more of a personal level. Just go up and say, hi, how you doing? And maybe find out, you know, if you have common interests. Music, obviously, is a touchstone. You know, I mean, I met David Bowie once. And, you know, I started talking to him about music, and we ended up talking about our kids.
How did you even start talking to somebody like that? I don't even know.
When I met him, he started the conversation, so it was a lot easier.
Well, that's nice to know, actually.
He to me is an icon. He is, I mean, he's just such a brilliant, brilliant guy. But he was very sort of down to earth and funny, and, you know, but like I said, you know, we start out talking about the B-52s, and we end up talking about kids. So,
you know, I bet you he prefers that to having somebody run after him asking for his autograph again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I think so, too. You know? He was a very private guy. you know. But yeah, you know, so I mean, that's, you just kind of, after a while, you just kind of go with that. You know, you, no matter who you're meeting, you don't want to get pie-eyed.
No, you don't.
And you don't want to go up and go, oh, I love this song and I love that song. And, you know, and it's nice to tell them, I just encapsulate it into, I really like your music.
Yeah,
you
know? I think that's the way to be.
Yeah.
And so many people do sort of lose it, and I understand that too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but, yeah. Well, I mean, how many times do you get to meet celebrities?
It's, yeah.
You know.
Exactly. It's like when you met me this morning, you were like, you didn't know what to say to me.
That's right. I know. I was in awe.
Thanks for
really
playing.
Was.
Thank you. All right. So getting back to reality, Squeeze, we were talking about, you know, their songwriting and the interesting, fast-moving lyrics and the musicianship mm-hmm. that's required. So we picked a song called Cool for Cats for that reason.
Mm.
I mean, this really, really shows that off. This is not easy to do.
No. And Jules Holland on piano. The great
yeah.
Jules Holland.
All right. Yeah, very, very prominent in there.
Mm.
That's for sure. All right. This is Squeeze and Cool for Cats here at WMFO.
The Indians send signals from the rocks above the pass. The cowboys take position in the bushes and the grass. The score is with the corporal, she is tied against a tree. She doesn't mind the language, it's the beating she don't need. She lets loose all the horses when the corporal is asleep. And he wakes to find the fire's dead and arrows in his axe. And Davy Crockett rides around and says it's cool for cats, it's cool for cats. The Sweeney's doing 90 cause they've got nowhere to go. They get a gang of villains in a shed up at Heathrow. They're counting out the fivers when the handcuffs lock again. In and out of Wandsworth with the numbers on their names. It's funny how the missus always looks a bleeding sane. And meanwhile at the station there's a couple of likely lads who swear like as your father and they're very cool for cats, they're cool for cats. Change the mood a little, I've been posing down the pub. I'm seeing my reflection, I'm looking slightly rough. I fancy this, I fancy that, I wanna be so flash. I give a little muscle and I spend a little cash. But all I get is bitter and a nasty little rash. And by the time I'm sober, I've forgotten what I've had. And everybody tells me that it's cool to be a cat, cool for cats. Onto the wall. I kiss her for the first time and then I take her home. I'm invited in for coffee and I give the dog a bone. She likes to go to discos but she's never on her own. I said I'll see you later and I'll give her some old chat. But it's not like they on the TV when it's cool for cats, it's cool for cats.
WMFO in Medford, 10:09 in the morning with Mike and Fred Pernot. We just heard Cool for Cats by Squeeze. And once again, Fred, you've clued me into something. You know, we all know that song. We all know the background vocals in there.
Mm.
And you said, you know, do you know those girls in there? They're a little bit off pitch.
Yeah, they are. That's, when they go, ooh, They you can hear it. They're slightly, just the tiniest bit out of pitch, and for some reason it really works.
It does. I mean, it certainly doesn't. It's not glaring, and it's like, oh, that's no good because no.
It almost works as in the arrangement of the song. It's really kind of a cool little factoid.
Totally. Here's another cool little factoid.
Cool.
Another person that you opened for, this is unbelievable to me, Prince.
Prince, yeah.
That I'm sorry, but that's crazy.
Yeah.
During the Dirty Mind tour as well.
Yeah.
St. Patrick's Day, 1981.
Yep.
What was that like?
It was pretty interesting. I was aware of Prince, but I hadn't really listened to his music. And then we got that show, and I went out and bought the Dirty Mind album and fell madly in love with it. We showed up for soundcheck. It was at the Metro. And we showed up for soundcheck, and Billy Budd, our road manager, said he's been soundchecking for 4 hours. And he said there's a slight buzz in the monitors, and he really isn't happy. And so he wrapped up sound checking, and his road manager went over to the people who were managing the club and said, we're coming back in X number of hours to do our show. If that buzz is still in the monitors, we're not doing the show.
Oh,
we're going to leave. And so they rented the PA equipment. I can't remember the company now, but the company that owned the PA equipment was there, and they just tore them apart. And when he showed up a few hours later, there was no buzz in the monitors.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a really interesting experience. I mean, when I saw Queen, they sounded just like their records. He's the same way. His band was phenomenal.
Phenomenal, yeah.
Really great. And by the end of the show, he was wearing nothing but a pair of black panties, black nylons, and these ankle-length black stiletto heel boots, and he's grinding against the mic stand. And the place is losing their minds.
It's like he and Debbie Harry were in the same closet.
I know. He was, what a performer. What a performer. Just an amazing, amazing performer. You know, I chatted with him a little bit backstage, short. And
He was.
And we just chatted about this and that, really. He was kind of shy, and he seemed most interested in the fact that I have two kids, and at that time, my son was, he was 12, and my daughter was 10. And I played all sorts of new music on at home on the record player, and I played the Dirty Mind album, and he was mesmerized by the fact that they loved the Dirty Mind album. Mm. And he said, did they know what it's about? You know, because it's a lot of real sexual stuff. And I said, nah. I said, you know, the song Head, I said, they think it's about somebody's head. You know?
You mean it's not?
No.
Oh, okay.
I know. I'm taking the illusion away. But no, he seemed really interested in that. But you know, just seemed like a nice, cordial guy. And just one of the best shows I've ever seen of any kind. Just phenomenal show. What a performer.
It's pretty cool. It's kind of cool that he had no choice but to look up to you.
Yeah.
See, a little joke there. Yeah, okay. We mentioned the album Dirty Mind. You picked a song called Got a Broken Heart Again.
Yeah.
A song that is in the consciousness of people that know Prince or even that album. Tell us a little bit about why you picked that song.
I love it because it's, to me, vocally, it harkens back to the soul singers of the late 50s and early 60s, the Jackie Wilsons, the Sam Cooks, you know, people like that. It's got that kind of feel to it, you know. It's not quite as rambunctious as, say, Sam and Dave, but it's really got that soul feel from the 50s and 60s to it, to me. And I've always loved the song. It's always been like a deep cut on an album, and I just thought it'd be a great song to play.
Well, deep cuts are the best. And this particular song, so glad to share it with the audience. Like I said, when you think of Prince, you don't really think of this song. But if you're in a place where you can turn it up, please do. From Dirty Mind, this is Prince, and Got a Broken Heart Again. This is WMFO. WMFO in Medford. I think it dropped something there.
Yeah.
What was that?
You probably actually did drop something, and he thought it sounded cool, so he left it in.
Prince and Got a Broken Heart Again from Dirty Mind. Dirty Mind, if I think of that record, it's all this like staccato bass, you know, and thumping stuff. And I didn't want that to stop.
No. That walking bass line. Doom, 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 doom. You know, it just takes you away. You know?
Yeah, man.
It really does.
Yeah. All right, so another one that I can't believe that we're going to talk about that you had interactions with is Roxy Music.
Well, we toured the whole country with them, yeah.
Yeah. You toured the whole country with Roxy. Yeah. So you must have plenty of opportunity to sort of talk with them.
Yeah, you know, I got to know particularly Brian and Andy McKay pretty well on the tour. And they, you know, another example of people who I idolized, who turned out to be nice people. And when I was in Bonjour Aviators, the first song I ever recorded that I had written was with Bonjour Aviators. It was a song called The Fury in Your Eyes. And we made a 45 of it. And it was inspired by Roxy Music. It was inspired by particularly the song Editions of You. And when I found, you know, when we got the Roxy Music tour, I said, I want to give Brian Ferry this record. So the first time I met him, you know, actually got to kind of talk to him. I went up to him. I had the record with me, and I just said, "Brian, I said I want to give you this." I said, and I explained the story to him. You know, how he had inspired that, and you know, Roxy Music, you know, blah 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 blah. And I said I fully expect it'll end up being a coaster in your house, but I said I just always sort of wanted to give you this and tell you how much it meant to me that, you know, your music. And he said to me, I'm just flattered I can inspire anyone to write a song.
Oh,
you know, and
so
I thought that
great.
It was cool. And then I'm sure I used it as a coaster, but that was really cool. And they were their road crew was so nice. They treated us so well. And at the end of the tour, their road manager said, you know, you guys, we really like you guys. He said, trust me when I tell you, all tours are not going to be like this one. And he was right. We found that out really quickly.
Oh, I'm sure.
But they were just nice. Andy McKay told me great stories about touring Japan. One kind of funny story was we played at a place called the Rainbow out in Colorado, and I think it was in Boulder. I can't remember, but no, it might have been Denver. But this place, this theater, the dressing rooms, for some genius, put them in the front of the theater. So in order to get to the stage, you had to walk through
the crowd.
So instead, you know, we had a tour bus. Roxy Music was flying. So we pulled our tour bus around the back, and we were using that as a dressing room because it had a bathroom in it. So the record company that Roxy Music had rented them an RV to use as a dressing room, but it didn't have a bathroom. So we're sitting in our tour bus just before the show, and we hear, you know, on the door on the bus, that we open it up, and it's Phil Manzanera, and he comes up and he goes, "Can I use your guys' bathroom?" And the front of the bus was a lounge, and so we're sitting in it, and we go, "Yeah, it'll cost you a quarter, but yeah, you can use it." So he goes and uses the bathroom, and he comes out and he tosses a quarter on the table and keeps walking.
Very nice.
And then 5 minutes later, and Andy McKay comes in. He doesn't say a word. He just walks down the aisle and flips a quarter on the table. And then, progressively, every time one of them had to use the bathroom, that's what they did.
That's pretty damn funny.
Yeah, yeah.
So after all that time spending with them, you picked a song that is from their second album called All Your Pleasure.
And it's For Your Pleasure.
For Your Pleasure. I must have typed that wrong. And it was... they used to use it as their last encore when Brian Eno was still with the band.
Yes, absolutely.
Called Editions of You.
Yeah, yeah. The Editions of You is my favorite Roxy Music song. It has been since I've heard it. I used to watch this show every night on tour. I mean, I can't even remember how many cities we did with them, but the very last encore they did was Editions of You, and it always brought the place down. It was just a phenomenal song, and... every time I think of Roxy Music, I mean, there's certainly a lot of Roxy Music songs I love, but this is the one I always go to.
All right, from 1999's For Your Pleasure, this is Editions of You, WMFO.
Addition of you.
WMFO, Medford, 10:25 in the morning. I'm Mike. He's Fred. You know, I just want to say, Fred, that was Additions of You by Roxy Music. And we spoke about David Bowie a second ago. I mean, if you were to ask somebody, who do you think that is? They may say David Bowie. It's very Bowie-ish.
Yeah, except Brian Ferry's vocal is so distinctive. I think that they both sprang out of exactly that same scene in England, you know. And Bowie was a big Roxy Music fan.
Well, you can, I mean, I bet you that it went back to him too.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So I just heard, that's what I heard. That's pretty cool. All right, so let's finish up with one more example, and this is a big one, of a band who you had a chance to interact with the Atlantics. And then we have a special kind of a never before heard or by very few ears, something from the Atlantics, and a version of a song that we all know really well that is not what we know.
Oh, almost no one has heard this, so...
Well, we're going to change that.
And there we are.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about a little band. Hey.
Yeah, I know.
It's called Cheap Trick.
Cheap Trick.
Cheap Trick. I mean, Cheap Trick is on everybody, so many people's lists of who, you know, who it is that influenced you.
What a great live band.
What a great live band. So this is your experience is with the Budokan tour in Japan.
Well, yeah, we were on the Live at Budokan tour in the States, not in Japan.
Okay.
The Live at Budokan album was out, and it was a big hit. After we finished with Roxy Music, we came back across the country headlining concert clubs, and then we went out with Cheap Trick for, I think, 7 dates on the Live at Budokan tour. The band was phenomenal. They were very, very nice people, but their management and their road crew people were intolerable. They were just almost impossible to work with. They wouldn't allow us sound checks. They wouldn't allow us encores. It was just awful. So we ended up leaving the tour after 7 dates. But I enjoyed every night watching them. I mean, they were just like a master class in rock band.
Oh, I bet.
They were just great.
I bet. So I don't know how we pick a song to play from those guys, but we did.
We did.
And I just want to mention, too, that you said just sort of offhandedly that their live album was a big hit. That's not a usual thing. Usually a live album is not a band's, you know, bottom line huge hit. But this was such a huge album of them being live. So it says an awful lot about their ability to play live.
Well, yeah, that and... they and Frampton, I think, were the two people who had the live album end up being a phenomenal hit and sort of broke them in a big way. But they, a funny story Barney Carlos told me was when they were shooting the cover art for the album in black and white and in color, they went up into the Hollywood Hills. I think it was the Hollywood Hills. And the photographer shot Robin and Tom first, you know, the pretty boys kind of.
Yeah.
And with, the cool motorcycles. And then it came time to shoot Rick and Bunny with the little mopeds. And he ran out of color film.
Oh.
And those were the days when you know, it's not like digital cameras now. If you didn't have any film, you couldn't do it. So all he had was black and white film. So we ended up shooting Rick and Bunny and Bun in black and white. And that's how the album ended up being called In Color and in Black and White. So, you know, just one more interesting wrinkle in the life of a rock star, you know.
Can you believe I just did what I just did?
No, and you handled it quite well, though.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know about that other microphone there, but yeah, we almost had something terrible happen, but I seem to have fixed it. All right, so we picked a song called She's Tight.
Yeah, I didn't want to do the usual stuff.
Yeah, it's from their a later career song.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just hear this, and then we're going to hear a little bit about the Atlantics and more about the local music scene here in Boston. So this is a great song from Cheap Trick's One-on-One CD. This is She's Tight at WMFO.
Oh, is tight. She's a talented girl. She's tight. She's got her hair down tight. I had something gotta say to you. Amnesia in a train of thought. On the tip of my tongue. I had a vision when I was young. We floated in, we floated up.
All right, WMFO in Medford, 10:33 in the morning. She's Tight by Cheap Trick. Just great stuff. So much stuff from that band that's just amazing. And that's just one of them. All right, Fred, as I sit here before you, if I weren't sitting down, I'd sort of say I'm not worthy because those stories were crazy. Thank you so much for sharing those with us.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. You know, at my age, I have my stories. That's what I have.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot more stories than that. We could fill up the whole friggin' day with them.
All right, so let's blow everybody's mind a little bit. There was a single that you guys put out. It was the year 1980, I believe, mm-hmm. By the Atlantics. And you had touched on this song before, Lonely Hearts, about mm-hmm. the record company and putting it out and all of that. And we all know a version of that very well around yep. here, especially in Boston. Yep. But you, being in that band, have a little surprise for us. It's an alternate version where it's got an alternate chorus.
Yeah, well, we worked harder on that song than any other song we ever did. And it's the only song. We ended up with three versions of it. And we demoed two versions of it. We whittled out one version, and then we did two demos of it. And then from those two demos, we picked the final version that we went down to New York to the Hit Factory to record. And that's the one everybody knows.
Right.
But this was the version that didn't make the cut. And I'm glad it didn't, listening to it now, because it's radically different. It's slower. It has a completely different chorus. So anybody right. who knows and loves the song is going to be interested in hearing this.
All right. So let's just pray, if we can, that the CD player works, because you never know.
You never do.
You never do. Okay. So this is, quote unquote, Lonely Hearts.
Alternate take.
Yeah. From the Atlantics at WMFO. Okay, just about 10:40 in the morning at WMFO Medford. Well, Fred, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but I'm glad that that song wasn't the one that went out, as you had said. Now, was there anybody who said that's the one, or everybody was new?
No, I don't think so. I think we are all pretty much in agreement. The one that ended up getting released that everybody knows was much more aggressive.
Much.
And, you know, that's, and it had a different, completely different chorus musically. So
yeah.
That was really the right way to go. And
yeah.
Never regretted it.
No, I agree with that. All right, so let's sort of fast forward here to 2024. Yep. And Rock Garden Records, your band, Little Billy Lost is on there, and I work with Todd and Lisa as well. And they've been doing a project called Mutual Admiration Society, where a bunch of folks on the label will sort of get together and get to make music together. And they've done a couple, and the latest one is a Stones tune called Street Fighting Man. And this is the first time it's ever going to be heard outside of Todd's studio. And the thing about this is there's a choir in there, because Todd said, hey, take your phone, take your microphone, whatever, and scream the chorus like you're at a show. And that's what we did.
Yeah, I mean, when Todd, you know, and Lisa approached me about doing a song for Mass, and Street Fighting Man was the song that I ended up with. I just loved the song. We wanted to do something different with it, you know, just twist it around a little bit, which I think we ended up doing. So I'm very pleased with how it came out. And hopefully the hordes out there listening will like it, too.
Okay, so you haven't heard the finished product.
I've heard some mixes of it, but I haven't heard this. He finished the final mix of this apparently at 3:30 this morning. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah.
All right, so this is Mutual Admiration Society. I'm on there, too, in the back, but you can't hear me because it's over 50 people that are screaming the chorus. So Street Fighting Man, Mutual Admiration Society, let's go. It's WMFO in Medford.
Rock and roll.
upon first listen, pretty cool.
Oh, thank you. Right? Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I got to give a shout out to Tim Betts, the drummer on that, who did a phenomenal job. And also Todd Erickson, who is producer supreme.
Yeah.
You know, he I play all the guitars on that, and he coaxed me through that in such a great way. It got me to come at the song from a lot of different directions. So I appreciate it, Todd.
It's pretty cool. I think that noise is construction outside. It must be.
Oh, maybe it is.
Maybe it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's, with the time we have left, which is a little less than 15 minutes, let's play something from Little Billy Lost, your latest single called Shout.
Yep.
Any thoughts about that?
Well, this the song had a long history of like 3 years before it was written, even though it's a 3-minute song, and it ended up with me tearing the song completely apart because we were never happy with it, and I tore it apart and reassembled it, and it ended up being the song you hear now. But I have a lot of appreciation to Todd and Lisa Erickson,
mm-hmm.
And Rock Garden Records. I can't say enough good things about them. They're just phenomenal people, and it's a phenomenal record company. So we're really appreciative to be on Rock Garden Records, and this is our first release on Rock Garden, and we're going to be going in the studio soon to record more stuff.
All right, this one's called Shout. I'm going to follow it up with the great track that was just released last week from Jennifer Teft and the Strange, her new rhythm section in that band called Caffeine, and we'll see how much time we have left and go from there.
Sounds like a plan.
But at the moment, it's Little Billy Lost and Shout at WMFO. Wow. What a great, great track from Jennifer Taft and the Strange.
Absolutely.
That's called Caffeine. Another one on Rock Garden Records. Yeah, crazy. All right, Fred. Time to say goodbye. I can't believe the two hours went by so quickly. It's really something. And I want to make sure that we acknowledge we played Little Billy Lost.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that track a little bit. And I want to end with one more song. You mentioned Todd and Lisa.
Yeah.
Todd's band is called Holy Smoke.
Yep.
And one of their latest records out is called Spirit of Change. And it's just great. So I want to end on that one.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can't say enough good things about Todd and Lisa. Their whole heart is in this record company. And their care and their... love of their artists is commendable, I'll tell you. And you don't see it today.
No, I mean, they really want to help their friends get their music heard. And they do not put anything out unless it sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just really do care.
Yep.
All right, so at almost 10:55 in the morning, I'm Mike. Jane is going to be up next with something about the women. We'll talk to her right after this track. And as we said, this is Holy Smoke and Spirit of Change right here at WMFO. It's WMFO Medford 10:58 in the morning. I'm Mike. It's time for me to get out of here. I want to thank Fred Pinot so much, and I want to thank whatever's making that noise so much for adding to the show. Appreciate that. An honor to end with Spirit of Change by Holy Smoke. And it's time to say hi to Jane. Hi, Jane.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Good. What the heck's going on? How are you?
I'm doing okay. I can't believe that we're already in March.
I know.
I'm like trying to adjust.
I know. So I love it when you're here for something about the women, because not only do you play great stuff and covers that I never knew that women did, but you do something special at noon. What are you doing today?
Well, today we are six-pack at noon. It's actually based in the fact that we are in March, which is Women's History Month, and we're gonna go in the Wayback Machine, back to the 70s when Olivia Records began, and which was women producers, engineers, making records for the first time featuring bands and vocalists that were female. And so we're going to check out some of that stuff, as well as some other great, what we put in quotes, women's music from that period of time. And that's our little shout out to Women's History Month.
Very, very cool. So what song are you starting out with?
We're going to start out actually with a band that is doing a show tonight. It's This Is The Kit. They are amazing, featuring Kate Staples, and she puts together a band, kind of whoever she's playing with at the time. She lives in France. She is English, and she's doing a show tonight at the Armory, right here in Somerville. So this is The Kit, and the name of the song is Sensations in the Dark, here on WMFO. Mayor Mike, where are we?
WMFO Medford. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll talk to you next week at 9.